Cinema Jaws brought to you by
The Blue Collar Conglomeration. The Blue Collar Conglomeration has just released their children's Christmas album called The Children's Jungle Book. It's available now on iTunes. Check it out, Jawheads. Just go to iTunes and search Blue, that's B-L-U, Collar Conglomeration. And by
Velvet is the most luxurious, highly coveted type of curtain in the world. Here at Lush's Curtains, we provide the largest selection of ready-made velvet curtains in almost any size you need. We've been adorning hotels, trade shows, theaters, casinos, and individuals for years. Come see our selection or have your custom velvet curtains made by the best. Just go to lushescurtains.com. That's L-U-S-H-E-S curtains.com and get Lush's today.
You're listening to Cinema Jaws, the greatest movies podcast ever. Recorded on location at the Original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Ryan, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaws, Matt, we get psyched about an upcoming Cinema Jaws as we cover our top five movie trailers.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, in a world, where one man talks about movies that are good and the other man doesn't.
Well, I didn't want to put you down that way, man.
No, it was you. I'm the hero in this story.
Oh, of course you are. Yeah. Now, we are covering this topic. Obviously, Jawheads, a big movie trailer just came out.
Really?
Star Wars Episode 7. You had to be stoked.
What's that? My fanboy panties were wet.
Oh, I can't wait to hear. We are actually going to do a little insight in what we thought of the trailer.
Okay.
We'll break it down a little bit.
Let's do it. Even though the entire internet has been frothing at the mouth since Black Friday.
Well, we've been wanting to cover our top five movie trailers for a long time, so what better time to do it than a big one like this?
Yeah, seriously. It's perfect timing.
Perfect timing. In addition to that, Jawheads, we have a guest that's going to be joining us, Mark Cantu. He is a writer-director of the film Now Hiring. It's a superhero comedy, Matt. Right up your alley.
Right up my alley, yes. I got to watch the preview of this film, and I really enjoyed it quite a bit, so can't wait to talk to Mark.
Yeah, he is going to be joining us via Skype. He's down in San Antonio, Texas.
Where it's warm.
Oh, better than here. He will be joining us shortly. Also, Matt, we go eye for an eye this week on Inherent Vice, the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Sweet, yeah.
In theaters, we have a theater review of the new Steve Carell film, Foxcatcher.
Cool.
And there's one out on DVD we wanted to highlight as well.
Yeah, A Most Wanted Man, one of the final performances from the great Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's just a good movie overall. Can't wait to talk about it.
And because of Inherent Vice being directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, Matt, you will be taking Mark on in Paul Thomas Anderson movie trivia.
Okay, don't know how to feel about that.
We'll see how it plays out. As always, Matt, it is a jam-packed jaw. All right. So without further ado, we bring in our guest, Mark Cantu, joining us from San Antonio, Texas, has written and directed the comic book comedy Now Hiring. Mark, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Hi, thank you guys so much for having us all the way down here in San Antonio, and I apologize for it being really warm and nice and tolerable down here where you guys are slammed with snow.
Yeah, that's fine, but come July, man, you're going to be wishing you were in Chicago.
This is absolutely true. I've been to Chicago twice already, and I loved it. I think it was in August when we went out there, and it was just phenomenal. Which is, by the way, we were shooting the movie at that time, so it was perfect weather for leather outfits and all that good stuff.
Just last summer that you guys shot this, or two summers ago?
It was last summer. We actually shot in summer of 2013. We took a little bit of a break. We started at the very tail end of 2012, I guess. It seems like such a long time ago. Took a little bit of a break there. We had to do some reorganization for the production. Pretty much spent all of 2013 just shooting. We pretty much had a run of the city. So we've had the luck of having San Antonio Film Commission on our side, and they've been supportive since day one, specifically because no one's ever shot a superhero movie in San Antonio. I think that was one of the big draws. And plus, it's a comedy. Who doesn't love comedy? There's a little bit of romance. Who doesn't love romance? And you know, we've got our own. Somebody coined us as the Third Coast Avengers.
Nice.
Which was kind of cool. And we were like, yeah, okay, that'll stick. That'll work.
For the Jawheads that are listening to this, the film is called Now Hiring. And what I've realized is a lot of the Jawheads agree with Matt. And Matt here loves his comic book movies. So I know a lot of the Jawheads are going to find this film quite interesting. Mark, give us sort of the sales pitch on Now Hiring, because it's such a sort of hilarious idea.
Pretty much in a nutshell, it's a guy who kind of bluffs his way into a job interview. His wife kind of urges him on. He's, you know, an unemployed husband. And his wife kind of tells him, you know, hey, you know, maybe you should really kind of, you know, boost your credentials up and just kind of, you know, over exaggerate your qualifications a little bit. And just so happens, the next job that he goes in for is for what he thinks is entertaining at, like, kids' parties, coming in out of a cake and, you know, being, oh, I'm the greatest superhero ever. So he really exaggerates and says, you know, I'm the greatest superhero that's ever lived. I'm bulletproof. I can fly. I can, you know, shoot lasers
out of his eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And so everybody's, you know, in the interview process, they're just like, oh, my God, this is the greatest superhero ever. So, of course, he lands the job. And it turns out, you know, the job's real and the heroes are real and the villains are real. So he has to kind of start learning what it really takes to be a hero. And if you really kind of look at it, it's half of a romantic comedy and half of like an origin superhero story. But in this case, his superpower isn't, you know, he wasn't born with, you know, special powers or anything like that. It's just, it comes from him being a family man. And that's kind of what his superpower is.
I love that there's some silly comedy where at one point they're going to invade where these guys got like a nuclear power plant hostages and stuff. And they got right. That old superhero. And right before they're getting ready to run around the cars, they say like, somebody wake up Jeff or whatever that superhero's name was.
Yeah.
And the old guy's like sleeping up against
the constantly drunk. Yeah.
He's sleeping up against the car. So there's some like sight gags and silly humor, but there's a lot of like smart, well-written humor. Just the premise of the movie is quite hilarious.
You know, I used to watch Blazing Saddles with my dad and, you know, old movies like The Odd Couple and things like that. So I really do like just kind of sight gags that just kind of happen in the frame and you've got to really kind of pay attention to it. But then at the same time, I love just that little verbal humor. It's almost like the like Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright kind of filmmaking where it's like, if you're not listening for it, you're not going to get the joke, but you've got to really be sharp and really pay attention to what's being said. So.
I even loved one other one that I got to mention, the movie poster that was behind Joe right before they go in for the interview. It says something about this guy doesn't wear condoms when he pees or something along those lines. It's a funny premise.
Yeah, it was one of those little jokes that we kind of, again, it kind of goes back to sight gags in the movie where it's like you want to kind of build this universe and, you know, with the Flamer, who's that's the flame-based superhero that we have, we kind of built him up like he was like this big 80s burnout. Like he was really good in the 80s and now he's just absolute crap. But in his heyday, he was like the Gene Simmons of superheroes. Like he was just awesome and he was probably laying pipe 24/7.
And you know what's interesting, too, for an independent movie, I think action sequences are probably the most difficult to pull off. And your film has the balls to open up with a humongous action sequence where you got superheroes actually fighting each other. There's some pretty nifty effects here.
Yeah,
you got
the special effects need to be noted in this. I mean, for an independent film, that's usually where a lot of them fall down. But yours, especially, like Rye was saying, balls. I think you guys had some balls to go for some big effects.
But there, to me, there's no harm in kind of really kind of setting the bar pretty high for ourselves in the very opening scene, letting it escalate there. But yeah, there's some more stuff past that that's even more
awesome. And I like, too, that there was a lot of play on the superhero on the
genre.
Yeah, on the superhero genre. You had one guy that sort of had the Batman voice. He had that really deep growl, you know.
We kind of tried to go down the list of like, okay, who's represented here? Like Average Joe, which is the main hero. He's kind of a weird mix between Captain America, Superman, and, you know, maybe Iron Man in there a little bit. But we definitely kind of made the conscious effort to go, okay, we need the Batman guy. And you know, that's the Night Watchman. You need the fast girl who's, you know, blinks, I should say. And we've got the flame-based superhero, and then we've also got the crazy scientist. So we kind of tried to go down the list and go, okay, we've ticked all the boxes. We made sure that, you know, everybody's represented there thoroughly. So, and even with the villains, too, we've got the, you know, the robotic henchman that, you know, kind of does all the dirty work and all the action.
Yeah, and now the lead actor, as you mentioned, he plays the character Average Joe, which is quite hilarious. The actor, his name is Jason, am I saying it correct, Cedillo?
Cedillo.
And he's hilarious. Did you know him prior to the film?
Yeah, I've actually known Cedillo for since about 97. We went to college together, and we did a few short films and stage plays when we were kind of in community college together. And then, you know, as things kind of go in life, you know, we kind of separated and, you know, he went his own way. I went my own way. And I think he moved to Hawaii for a while. I went off to college and did my own thing. And then probably about 2011, we just kind of came back into each other's lives. Just, you know, moved back to San Antonio and, you know, he was like, hey, you know, are you guys working on anything? And I was like, yeah, I think we kind of are. And right about that time I was writing the script for it. And I just kind of turned to my wife at a party once and I was like, hey, I think Sadiq might actually work pretty well. your average Joe. He's kind of got the got everything I'm looking for. And, you know, one thing led to another, and we never considered anybody else.
That's awesome.
And for the jawheads that are probably listening to this, wondering where they're going to be able to find this, what's the next step, I guess, in the process? Still trying to find distribution?
Yeah, we're in the process right now. We are actually we've got the film in the hands of a couple of distributors. We're just kind of waiting to hear back. And there are some potential kind of avenues overseas as well. So we're just kind of waiting to hear back. So we're kind of in a holding pattern right now. Hopefully within about, I'd say, a month or so, we should know something pretty solid.
Well, best of luck with it. I loved it. I loved the premise of it, and I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, keep us posted. Let us know where it goes, man, because we'll be happy to spread the word, because definitely like this film.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be great to bring it up to you guys as well at some point and screen it in movie theater or something. So.
Oh, for
yeah,
sure.
We've got plenty of screenings down here in Texas already, so we're definitely bright.
And obviously, the jawheads that want to find out more about the movie online, do you guys got like a Facebook page and such?
Yeah, we do. I believe it's under nowhiringmovie.com or nowhiringmovie on Facebook. And then our website is at nowhiringmovie.com.
Nowhiringmovie.com.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Awesome. Great job with it, Mark. So much fun. Can't wait to watch the entire thing.
No, thanks, man. Like I said, it was a good year's worth of work. And a lot of people, you can tell there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
Good stuff. So this is great. Mark will be sitting in on this entire jaw. He has his top five favorite movie trailers pulled, as me and Matt do.
Yeah, and now we got, if there was a bit of an audio issue up at the top, we got a better connection with Mark now over the phone line, Ryan. We're going old school.
Oh, the old telephone.
Yeah. I dialed him up with my finger on the rotary, asked the operator to connect us, and here we are.
Hey, what's cheers, Elias, here? He always gets it done somehow, some way. We're going to figure out to have Mark on with us.
Cheers, Elias.
Cheers, Elias.
Mark, can you hear us better now?
Yeah, absolutely. I got your carrier pigeon, so it's good.
All right, good.
Oh, baby.
Good old carrier pigeon. Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
OrthoGeeks.com.
Tell me more.
You know the value of having the support of your family, friends, and coworkers, so why not support your joints and strained muscles, Rye? You got to relieve the pain while adding to the recovery process. OrthoGeeks.com will help you find the orthopedic support braces that you've been looking for. And I know, Ryan, you're looking for these all the time. It's easy to navigate, easy to search. OrthoGeeks.com not only has braces, but information on various injuries and conditions. Visit OrthoGeeks.com and start getting the knee, ankle, elbow, wrist, or shoulder support that you need, Ryan.
Wonderful.
And a lot of jawheads out there might need.
Indeed. Eye for an Eye this week, Matt, Inherent Vice. In 1970, drug-fueled Los Angeles detective Larry Doc Sportello investigates the disappearance of a former girlfriend. The film stars Joaquin Phoenix, Josh Brolin, Reese Witherspoon, Benicio del Toro, Owen Wilson, and Martin Short. It is directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who also adapted the screenplay from the novel of the same name. Matt, interested or ignore on Inherent Vice?
Interested. It looks like maybe modern-day Pulp Fiction, the next Pulp Fiction.
Really?
Is that going too far? Is that too much? Too strong?
I don't know. Let's see what Mark thinks. Mark, interest or ignore on Inherent Vice?
I'm going to go with slight interest. I felt slightly burned by The Master a little bit. It probably wasn't my favorite film. I mean, obviously, There Will Be Blood, I was a huge fan of. So I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's got the old Boogie Nights fever back.
I got to agree with you. I think when I've watched this trailer, I'm not sold like I have been on sort of the past Paul Thomas Anderson movies. It seemed like he could do no wrong. I'm not like, wow, foaming at the mouth like I thought I would be for Inherent Vice. That said, you nailed it, Mark. You got to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm interested. Absolutely. I'll be checking it out and hoping for the best. And you're right, you hit it on the head with Boogie Nights, because it sort of looks like this huge ensemble piece, period comedy. Could be another Boogie Nights on his hands.
I'm hoping for it.
Me too, yeah.
Three interesteds for Inherent Vice. Before we get to our theater review of Foxcatcher, since we are speaking of an upcoming movie, there was a trailer released over the...
You don't say!
Thanksgiving holiday that had everybody buzzing on the internet. Me and Matt, very excited. Star Wars Episode 7. It's just a teaser trailer. It was 88 seconds long.
And it broke the internet.
Matt...
More than Kim Kardashian's butt.
Give us your take, Matt.
Okay, so first of all, I'm not sure what all the backlash is about for the black stormtrooper. I mean, that has to be addressed. That there's some pretty narrow-minded jerks on the internet who need to say stuff about this.
The civil rights have finally got to the empire.
We just had to better ourselves. That was awesome.
Yeah, well done, actually. Very well done. No, I mean, seriously, guys, come on. Let's put that aside. The trailer itself, I thought was, I mean, it's pretty sparse. Like you said, it's just a teaser. It opens up on some sand dunes. Obviously, we're on the world of Tatooine. You see the two leads, and they're sort of both seemingly running from something or other, probably the Empire. Then it cuts to some stormtroopers. And did you see the George Lucas special edition version of the trailer?
I have not.
I'm getting it mixed up in my head. There was a spoof that already came out. Mark, did you see this?
Unfortunately, I did. And it ends with Jar Jar screaming as the Millennium Falcon is kind of going through the sky. And I had to cringe.
And there's like 800 TIE fighters instead of just like three.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
So I'm sort of mixing it up with that, the George Lucas special edition trailer. The scene that everyone's talking about here is when you finally see, and it's just the back of the villain, and he's walking through sort of like a creepy dark forest. And he turns on his lightsaber, and then you get the two little flanges on the side. It's sort of like a crossed lightsaber, like a hilt, which is a new style of saber we haven't seen before. It looks pretty cool to me. I'm interested in that.
That's interesting. What about probably the best shot of the trailer? And Mark, would you agree? The Millennium Falcon. We finally see it after all these years, and the shot that they used it. It's I don't know if the Falcon has ever looked more beautiful.
Yeah, than anything else that has made me feel like a 5-year-old kid again. Like, even just thinking about it, I can't, you can't really wrap your mind around it. The music comes up at just the right moment, and it's just, you've got the little bits of, smoke kind of coming off of the entrails.
Yeah, the contrails.
And it looks so cool. And you're just like, yeah, take my money now. Just do it.
And now the part that you're speaking about, Matt, with this villain in the woods, he lights up this lightsaber. I thought, for my money, the trailer all the way up to that was about an A+. But that stupid cross lightsaber, that thing was just ridiculous was just done to like one-up Darth Maul's lightsaber. I don't know what the hell they were thinking with that thing.
They were thinking that was a badass, cool move to make.
I wouldn't say that was a badass. I thought that really brought the trailer down.
No way, man. That was cool. That was probably the best part of the trailer.
You know what? Cinema War.
Cinema War, all right.
We're going to have a Cinema War on the subject, Mark, and you're going to have to play judge and jury and tell the jawheads who won this one.
I'm going to have to play Judge Judy and executioner.
That's right.
But yes, overall, if I was grading the trailer, I'd give it an A- only because of the cross lightsaber.
Oh, man. I think I actually said 5 stars out of 4. It's a top-notch trailer. Definitely get you excited. And Mark, I think you hit it on the head, and everybody feels this way. When the Millennium Falcon starts doing the barrel rolls, we all felt like a 5-year-old kid again. I literally had goosebumps. I've already seen this trailer probably at least 24 times. I rewatched it 4 or 5 times right in a row as soon as I could. I'm totally stoked for this. Totally stoked.
I've watched it several times with my headphones firmly just kind of squeezed up against my head, so that way when the Williams score kind of comes up, I got to give it the 5 stars out of 4. I have to. So yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Well received. I think we're in good hands with J.J. Abrams.
I think so too.
Speaking of new movies, Matt, I did get out and catch Foxcatcher.
Do you have any idea who I am? Some rich guy calls you on the phone. I wanted to speak with you about what you hope to achieve. What do you hope to achieve, Mark?
I want to be the best in the world.
Good.
There's a key for you. Also, big house is off limits.
Okay. Coach DuPont has a vision. He would like Foxcatcher to be the official training site for the national team.
What's he get out of all this?
What are you thinking? This is it. This is all that we've ever wanted.
Mark, you have been living in your brother's shadow your entire life. It's your time now.
Promise you, I'll give you everything I have.
I am leading men, and I am giving America hope.
I spent my lifetime looking for a father, and I have found one in John DuPont.
It doesn't matter. The sport of wrestling is a low sport. And I don't like to see you being low.
Why is there nobody in the gym?
Yeah, no, I can't.
You ungrateful ape.
The true story of John DuPont, a millionaire turned Olympic wrestling coach who becomes obsessed with one of his wrestlers, is brought to the screen very vividly by Steve Carell, Channing Tatum, and Mark Ruffalo. Carell plays John DuPont and is almost unrecognizable on screen thanks to a prosthetic nose, fake teeth, and the best acting of his career. And speaking of career bests, Matt, holy Tatum, Batman. I am not a Channing Tatum fan, but he acts his butt off in this movie. He plays Mark Schultz, the Olympic wrestler who forms a relationship with John DuPont. Ruffalo, meanwhile, plays his wrestling brother David, and he is also amazingly believable in this role. The story of this millionaire trying to help put American wrestling back on the map begins innocently, but ends very tragically. Director Bennett Miller paces the film beautifully as I felt myself getting more and more disturbed by DuPont as each scene passed. Miller deliberately uses a minimized score. There are scenes with such uncomfortable silence. This has the effect of raising the tension level of the characters on screen. As the movie boils to its climax, I found myself getting nervous for some of the characters, and I think that is the ultimate compliment here. Tense, uncomfortable, and disturbing, Foxcatcher will put you in a submission hold. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws.
So, Carell, this is his best ever, huh?
Yeah, well, obviously, he's hilarious in other roles. 40-year-old virgin. And I thought he did
he's known for comedy.
Right, and I thought he did a great job in The Way, Way Back, where he was sort of dramatic and sort of the evil stepfather type role. Wonderful. But this is a total gamble on his part.
Okay, I want to ask you a question, and this might be a spoiler. So, Mark and Jawheads listening, spoiler alert. Because this is a true story. Whoa, there's your spoiler alert. Does it go up to the murder?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because DuPont's I think he's dead now.
He did die already.
Yeah, but he died in prison. He went to jail for murder,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't think that is a spoiler. This is a story that's out there, and I think most people, when it came on, probably maybe they didn't know about it right at the time, but it's been talked about now on CNN, and sort of the movie has sort of recaptured, you know, the fascination with the story that this millionaire DuPont, who at one point the DuPonts were the richest family in the United States, that this guy just sort of went berserk and murdered, you know, and we won't say who he murdered,
sure,
just in case,
right,
Jawheads don't know, but yeah.
And he was sort of protected by his wealth, so... Yeah, he didn't come to justice right away.
Well, you got to see the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, got to see the movie for that. There are a couple other finer points I did want to bring up. Vanessa Redgrave plays DuPont's mother in this movie, and while she only has a couple of scenes, her character is vital to understanding John DuPont a little bit better. Great job that they picked like a heavyweight actress like Vanessa Redgrave, really came through. And then back to Tatum, who was just unbelievable in this. I've become almost a Channing Tatum fan after this movie.
Bite your tongue.
He has this intense scene, Matt.
You liked him in Magic Mike, too.
He was good in that, actually. Yeah. He had this intense scene in a hotel room. He freaks out to the point that I was actually worried for him in real life. I thought, oh, my God, he must have hurt himself during the scene. That's how intense it is. It's crazy.
Wow.
And then last but not least...
Is he in a G-string?
No, not in this one. Right. I did
a unitard?
Hear... Steve Carell, I did hear Steve Carell on Howard Stern, and it was interesting because Stern asked him if he knew he was making something great when he was making Foxcatcher, because now all this buzz and award, you know, he might get nominated for an Academy Award and such. And I found his answer fascinating. Carell went on to say no. In fact, at one point, he talked to Mark Ruffalo, and he said to him, you know what? This might be the worst thing we have ever done. I'm wearing a fake nose, and you're walking around like a gorilla trying to be a wrestler. And then Carell went on to say, that goes to show you what a collaboration making a film is. I mean, they're doing their best, but they're not sure if the director's getting it, how it's going to be edited together, and what the finished product is eventually going to look like. And as great as a performance you can put on, you still need the help of an entire crew, cast, and everybody else around you to really have it come off great. And I thought that was an interesting point to end with, because Mark, being a director who just finished up a movie, you can probably appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, it definitely takes a village, yeah. So, and that's the thing is, I mean, obviously as a director, you've got to have a strong idea of what you want to get done. But within that process, you have to be completely malleable on the day. So it's being completely prepared every day and then throwing it all away once you get there. And that's kind of, at least that's my process. But yeah, I'm a complete fan of Bennett Miller that you're talking about there, because I liked Jonah Hill before I saw him in Moneyball. I thought he was okay.
Right.
But then, you know, when my wife and I just kind of happened to catch half of Moneyball, you know, on TV one day, and it's one of those movies that has gone into our cycle where we'll watch it on repeat sometimes just because it's so good. And it's the same thing there you're talking about, is that there's moments where the silence is just so full and pregnant, and you're just like, wow, it feels like real life. It feels like you're actually in the middle of the room.
I agree. He has a way of doing that and sort of trusting the scene, you know. A lot of directors, I should say, they fault to go to the score to let us know that this is a dramatic moment or this is a moment that we're supposed to laugh at.
It's almost like a crutch.
Right. And there are so many times, especially, I noticed it in Moneyball, but especially in Foxcatcher, where he leaves it silent and it's just, you know, two people looking at each other on screen, and without no music, no sound, it's just amplified that much more.
Yeah, and I think as audience members too, especially, we get used to that. We kind of become reliant on music kind of telling us, okay, this is an indicator. But I think it's something like even like a David Fincher does, where it's just, you're just in a room and he's going to use the silence as just another tool just to kind of make you feel like you're going through the exact same thing that the characters are going through. And I think it's the mark of a good director that sometimes a director will tell an actor, take everything off of it, just don't do anything. And that's the most interesting thing you can do. And as a director, you do the exact same thing. You're like, just take everything out of the scene. Don't put any fancy lights. Just let it be two actors in a room and let it happen. And that's it.
So definitely Jawheads, Foxcatcher, 3.5 Jaws. Check it out. I mean, the performances alone, it's worth checking out. And I think it's a fantastic movie. There's one other one that we did want to mention. It's out on DVD. I don't know, Mark, if you've caught this one. You can also get it on video on demand. And it really came to our attention because Philip Seymour Hoffman popped up in Mockingjay Part 1. And we were mentioning that, you know, it's so sad that he's left us. He did do A Most Wanted Man. Me and Matt both caught that. What'd you think, Matt?
So I really like this movie. Have you seen it, Mark, first of all?
Is it something to do with like an espionage thing?
Yeah.
I've seen a trailer for it, and I thought it looked pretty interesting. I just haven't heard much since then.
So if I had to, taking a page out of Rye's book, give this film parents, I would say Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, and No Country for Old Men.
Nice. That's parents.
And I think the latter would become clear after a viewing of this film as to why I picked it. Some great actors pop up in this movie. I mean, obviously you have Philip Seymour Hoffman, which is unfortunately probably one of the last films we're going to get to see him in, one of the last new films. Also, Willem Dafoe pops up. You know, Rachel McAdams is great as sort of the female, like ingenue sort of. She's the bait.
She first popped up, I thought she was going to be the weak link here, but not the case.
No, not at all. She actually really shined in this. Robin Wright as the American.
Loved her in that.
I loved her too. And I don't know if you caught Congress, but I'm really, really happy with the trajectory that Robin Wright's career is on right now. I hope she continues it. She's taking on that older stately professional role. And I like the transition that she's going through in her career. I think it's great.
Yeah. And the film is set in Hamburg, Germany.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that threw me off, because right at the beginning, there's like a little text scroll that says that Hamburg is the place where the 9/11 attacks were planned. They were conceived and planned in this city. So I honestly thought at first, and this is my own ignorance because I read nothing, saw no trailers, I thought that the film was going to be about the planning of the 9/11 attack. So I didn't really catch on to the fact that this was post 9/11 until Philip Seymour Hoffman's character says it later on. So that was one of the few criticisms I would have of the movie, because I didn't really know what year it was. The cell phones could have been 2001. They were using pretty old technology. I still don't really know what year it was.
Yeah, I don't know if it's all that important, though, other than it is post 9/11. And that's important because obviously the Americans' role, played by Robin Wright, sort of feeds off that idea that America has a stake in this, because Philip Seymour Hoffman is actually playing a German who is spying on someone that might not actually be doing anything wrong, but this particular character may be leading them to someone that is sort of sending money in the wrong direction, I guess is the best way to say it.
Right.
And it's sort of morally, do you sit there and still watch this guy and use this innocent man as a pawn? Is he innocent or isn't he, is sort of part of the fun of the movie. And then where it leads and how long do you go along spying on this guy?
Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman absolutely carries this movie on his back. He's a smoker. Jesus, I think he smokes in every single scene that he's in. Seriously, he's always lighting or smoking a cigarette. And I don't know if the guy wheezes. I've never heard him wheeze in other films. So just a testament to this actor and the performance that they managed to capture. I don't know if they did ADR work, but you hear his breath and it's so heavy, you know, like he's breathing like somebody who's been smoking for like 30 years, like three packs a day, you know?
Well, I was going to ask, they have accents in this movie. Did you
nailed it?
You like the accents? It took me a little while to pick up on it. After a while, I became totally fine with it.
He didn't overdo it. He was doing a very subtle German accent, and he also really picked his words. But like when he would swear, like that was the only time I thought he sounded American. But maybe that's just because I'm so used to hearing, you know, the word fuck with an American accent. I don't know.
And also Rachel McAdams has an accent. So those two, it took me a little while because you're so used to them being, you know, American actors. So that was a little, I guess, took me a while. But after a while, all right, I believed it.
I'm just so sad. It sucks that we're going to get no more Philip Seymour Hoffman, because he can truly become a role. And to see him as like a CIA, it wasn't CIA, but as an espionage, like operative, sort of a leader, it's so believable. Damn, I wish I could see more of that from him.
And it's funny that you mentioned that one of the parents would be Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. The same writer that wrote Tinker Tailor wrote A Most Wanted Man.
See?
Yep.
I didn't even know that.
No, based off of both of the same author's books.
Wow. So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Very slow.
Yeah. How many Jaws? I'd give it three Jaws.
Yeah, I'd give it three Jaws. It's not for everyone. Here's the thing. This is a slow burn. If you enjoyed Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, you're going to love this one. If you really like fast-paced action with a lot of like quippy comedy, this isn't going to be a movie for you. I think a lot of people probably won't enjoy this movie, but I really did. So
definitely check it out, Jawheads, especially for Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. It brings us to our top five list this week, Matt. And it's interesting. We are covering our top five favorite movie trailers. And when I was doing this list, we sort of gave the criteria to our guests, and me and Matt sort of discussed the same criteria. And I sort of phrased the question as it was a trailer that sparked something, did something different, and or it was just plain memorable, something that you remember that really got you excited for a movie. And as great as the internet is, and we have this access to be able to watch the Star Wars trailer 5-6 times right in a row.
10.
20. That's awesome, right? But in the same way, it's amazing how that's sort of taken away a little bit of the magic of the movie trailer, because some of my memories that when I was coming up with my list, I have such distinct memories of the very first time I caught a glimpse of a movie and I was in a dark theater and it was like, oh my God, that looks amazing. We didn't have all the news that...
Yeah. You couldn't reach into your pocket and pull out your phone and watch it again immediately.
Right. And you were like, I didn't even know this movie was coming out. You were so excited for it. And do you feel that way a little bit, Mark?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's one of the things. I mean, you become desensitized to it. So, like you said, the convenience of it is kind of helped lose a little bit of the luster of, you know, how special trailers are sometimes, is that, you know, it feels like an event when you see that. I think we tend to overanalyze things, but I think that's one of the powers about the Star Wars trailer, is that even though you've watched it 1,000 times, probably 100 over here on this side, it still has the power to give you the chills on the back of your neck and just kind of turn you into a 5-year-old kid and just be like, yep, I'm going to see that.
So we are covering our top five movie trailers. Mark, you're getting a start at this week. What do you got sitting at number five? These can be either memorable trailers or something that you were like, wow, that was ballsy by him.
I really have to start off with number five, probably because it has introduced us to the WAS in trailers. But anyway, I'd have to go with Inception. Maybe the first trailer that I would probably go with at number five.
I love that trailer. It's an honorable mention for me, only because I've talked about Inception so many times on the show. I'll watch the Inception trailer still to this day. Like, I'll be going through something, and, you know, you get through stuck in that YouTube hole or whatever, and you're going through videos. And I'm like, you know what? I'll watch the Inception trailer one more time. It plays the score beautifully, and it's just the ending of it's fantastic.
I think the
probably one of the best scores for a trailer I've ever heard. So.
Nice pick at number five. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
Well, I will say this. The trailer's better than the movie.
No. It's a masterpiece of a film, isn't it, Mark?
Yes.
All right.
I would happen to agree.
There we go.
The word master is in what I would say about it. Number five, I have, and this is the cliche pick. I got to get this out of the way, but I remember when I saw this trailer in the theater and how excited I got. Right up there with the Star Wars trailer, the trailer for the first Spider-Man. It encapsulated everything that is the character Peter Parker, and it didn't suck. We didn't have all those details about the organic web shooters and everything that kind of dragged that movie down. It was great. Willem Dafoe was in it. And the whole line, you know, you do too much, you're not Superman, you know, at the end, was just icing on the cake. It was great that we saw Spider-Man in a legit movie for the first time. Can't even tell you how stoked I was.
Yeah, I've seen that trailer a couple of times, and I remember it standing out quite a bit, but yeah, looking back on it, it's kind of slightly dated, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Nice pick, though.
No doubt. It is dated.
Matt's a big Spider-Man fan, so I could see it there. Swings it over to my number five. And of course, at number five, I got to have a foreign film. But this trailer, I had Jawheads. I urge you. The fun thing, too, about this list is the Jawheads can literally pull these trailers up on YouTube after we get done discussing them. So this is a beautiful one to check out. It stars Marion Cotillard. I'm speaking of the film Rust and Bone. And I know Matt has never seen the trailer for sure.
Nope.
But here's why I love it. I'm a big fan of the band M83, and they may even come up again in my list. And the song used here by M83 is My Tears Are Becoming a Sea. The movie is pretty damn good. I would urge Jawheads to check it out. It's I'd say a three jaw movie. I think they cram too much in there. But when you see the trailer, it's so powerful. It looks like you're about to watch the greatest movie of all time. I would say this is a case where the trailer totally upstaged the movie. I was like so pumped when I saw this trailer. I'm like, oh my God, they made a masterpiece here. I got to go see this, you know. The movie didn't quite live up to that hype. Still, like I say, worthy spin. Check it out. It's on DVD. Rust and Bone. My number three. And check out the trailer. Pause the podcast and check out the trailer. You'll get chills.
Better than the movie.
All right, we're into our fours. Mark, what do you got sitting there?
Anytime I ever hear the term courtroom drama for any movies, this is the one that my kind of barometer kind of goes up against. But I have to go with A Few Good Men. That's one of those trailers that it's got that, I don't even know what the piece of music is really, but it's the one that kind of plays right at the very end as they're kind of showing all the highlights. But they start off the trailer with, you know, Kiefer Sutherland, Demi Moore. I mean, like, they've got every great actor from, like, the 90s who are still probably, I mean, they're all working today, too. But they're all in their prime. They're all, you know, chewing on Aaron Sorkin dialogue, and they're all spitting it out, you know, pretty quick. And then it cuts to, you know, Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise going back and forth, and you've got this great score behind it. And honestly, any time I ever think of any courtroom drama, whether it's, I think there was one with Robert Downey Jr. that just came out, you know, it kind of pales in comparison as far as I'm concerned to the trailer for A Few Good Men. And it's such a basic trailer, but it's what I measure every courtroom drama up against. You know, and it's that powerful for me. So.
Sure. I have not seen the trailer, I know, in a long time. I'll seek it out, though. I'll give it a spin. That's the beauty thing about YouTube.
It's a wonderful piece of music, and it's nice and classy all the way through.
I love that film. I don't think I've ever seen the
trailer. Throw it in the Jawbox. What music plays in the Few Good Men trailer, Elias?
It got used a lot in like a lot of other, I guess, dramas and political thrillers. I think they also used it for like Clear and Present Danger. And like,
okay.
It's once you hear it, it's pretty obvious. You're like, oh, I think I know that piece of music. But yeah, but it's a great trailer.
Awesome. Hmm. Matt, what do you got sitting at number four?
All right. At number four, I have a movie trailer that absolutely took me back. Well, it gave me the feeling that I was a child when I watched this trailer. And it was the trailer for Spike Jonze's ultimately somewhat disappointing Where the Wild Things Are.
Also on my list. Wonderful
really?
Pick. Yes.
Wow. See, and I think I'm probably going to get crap for saying that the movie was ultimately disappointing. But the Maurice Sendak book, and don't get me wrong, I loved the movie, and I really love the book. But Spike Jonze took a lot of artistic license with it and maybe didn't completely match up with what my expectations of what the story was. But that aside, let's just talk about the trailer.
Right.
That trailer really made you feel like you were a little kid. And when the wild things are like carrying him and he's like, I didn't want to wake you up. I just wanted to show you something. The special effects, and I just obviously rewatched it today, hold up so well. That was such good special effects.
It was. And let me give you a couple of highlights here. I had this at number two, and I'll sub something in because okay. I got a couple of highlights right here. But so we'll talk about it here. Two things about this trailer that I remember. Matt, you hit it right on the head. It takes you back to a kid. I saw this in the theater. The trailer played, I'm not even joking you, it was a crowded theater for whatever movie I was seeing. And as soon as that trailer ended, humongous applause.
You know
it did its job. Yeah, you know, wow. I mean, everybody just loved it. And the song that plays in there, Arcade Fire, Wake Up. People can write in now, but I'll go on record and say it's probably one of the greatest songs of the past 25 years, and especially because it hits the tones of childhood. That's what the whole song is. It's huge triumphant to it, and wow, it fits the trailer perfect. I loved it. You like this one, Mark?
I haven't seen it in a long time. I haven't seen that trailer in a long time. I think I saw it a couple of times a while back, so I probably have to go back and look it up on YouTube during one of my binges. So,
you know, here's the thing, the mark of a great trailer. I remember when this trailer came out. This is another one I watched like three or four, maybe five times right away. I like rewatched it. And I had to go into the next office and say, you guys have to see this. The trailer for Where the Wild Things Are is out. And it was, you know, everyone was like, oh, really? Let's watch this right now.
I know.
It's a great book that we all read, or our moms read to us when we were little. So, you know,
yeah.
It meant something.
And two, I mean, a lot of times the trailers can convey the message of the movie so much easier than watching the entire film. The trailer just nailed what the message of the book was perfectly.
So. The trailer could have been the whole thing, and I would have been happy.
Yeah, I love it. That's a great pick at number four. Swing it over to mine, and oh my, look at this. I have a J.J. Abrams movie on my list.
Uh-oh.
And this was, I was probably late to the game and didn't know J.J. So well when he came out with this film, one of his first feature films, and the trailer for Cloverfield, my number four.
It was an honorable mention.
Okay, honorable.
Okay, honorable mention.
It was so interesting because if you've seen Cloverfield, the whole idea was this sort of like found footage genre where they were going to be walking around a party and, you know, they're in New York. And the opening trailer is almost like you might be seeing a comedy, right? It's this, everybody's talking to the camera. It's
right.
Sort of funny.
It's a douchey rom-com.
Right. Oh, yeah. Boy, what the hell is this? And then all hell breaks loose. But it's just enough where it was exciting, but you didn't really know what was happening in the trailer. So it left you with that idea of like, I got to find out what the heck's going on in this movie. I don't know if it's aliens attacking, if it's, you know, a bomb went off in the city. Is it terrorists? I have no idea. And that idea that a trailer does not have to spell out the entire movie was so refreshing to sort of be excited to find out what the movie was even about. I had no idea. I was pumped.
The whole marketing campaign around that film was pretty genius. I have to say, I liked it. It was ultimately, again, probably better than the finished product.
Yeah, and then when I finally when I finally saw the movie, pleasantly surprised. I thought Cloverfield was a hit. Mark?
Yeah, I think J.J. Abrams is probably one of those directors, a few directors now, that really kind of leaves a lot of surprises for an audience to say, no, I'm going to let you experience this in a movie theater where it needs to be seen, in a darkened theater with 300 other people who are just kind of sitting on the edge of their seat. And I think he's probably one of the best guys in the business at that. Yeah, I completely remember that trailer. I thought it's definitely a standout for me. I would say it's an honorable mention just because it does set the tone so well. And then if we're talking about that, I guess it's that final trailer where the Statue of Liberty's head kind of
thrown
down.
That was the moment.
A nod to, like, what is it, Escape from New York, I think. So.
Yeah, it was awesome. So that was my number four. We're into our threes. Mark, what do you got sitting there?
Threes, I have bittersweet feelings about. I feel like everyone experienced this one and kind of felt like they got thrown under the bus when we saw the final product. But having said that, as a first taste, a first trailer, this is the first one that I legitimately remember sitting in the theater. And I had gone to see Enemy of the State, which is a Tony Scott movie. And I remember seeing this trailer just right before the movie. And I couldn't think about the movie. I couldn't think about Enemy of the State for like 10 minutes into it, because I was so obsessed with them playing The Phantom Menace before the movie.
Wow.
And I remember sitting there just with my jaw on the floor, and you know, a double-bladed lightsaber and Darth Maul, and that's all you could think about. And that was the first time. I mean, obviously, we never had phones. We didn't have any of that at that time. And I remember just being on the floor and just being like, is this what it was like back in 77? Like, for people who didn't know, you know, about Star Wars. And it, you felt like a kid again. And then, you know, 6 months later, you went to the movie, and it was like, oh, okay, well, is that it? All right, well, never mind then.
such harsh things to say about the Phantom Menace. I don't bash it as much as some people on here, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean. What's a funny story about it, too, is it doesn't seem like we're that far removed from when The Phantom Menace came out. But when you think of what you were saying, that there was no YouTube yet at that point. I actually taped on VHS tape. Still had a VCR rocking in the house at that time. I taped it off of like Entertainment Tonight or something so that my brother could watch it. And then we watched it so many times. We'd rewind it and we're like, this looks awesome. They had the pod race at the very end. It was spectacular.
I think my roommate in college at the time, we went back, and I was going to school in out here in Texas, is that we actually spent, I remember we spent about a day and a half trying to download it from the Star Wars website, because there was just so many people trying to get it. And it was, and I remember finally when we did get it, we were like, we'd play it over and over for hours and hours and hours. And it built us up, and it did its job, and that's what it was for. And unfortunately, just like I said, as far as I was concerned, the movie just didn't deliver. So.
Nice pick. I'm glad it came up.
Yeah, no, it all comes full circle.
Matt, what do you got sitting at number three?
All right. Well, speaking of Cloverfield, I have a very recent pick from 2014, Godzilla. That trailer, and I don't know if it's better than the movie, because I really like the movie, but that's a damn good trailer. The Marines are dropping through the sky with the flares, and it's Bryan Cranston's voiceover. You're trying to hide something out there, you know, and he's like, it's not a natural disaster. And you can hear in his voice, he's almost crying, like, such a great performance, such a great actor. It's this fantastic voiceover. And then you get these little glimpses. They're like, remember those tests in the nuclear tests in the Pacific? Those weren't tests. They were trying to kill it. You see, like, the scales. You see these other parts. And we hadn't seen a Godzilla on screen, or at least an American Godzilla on screen, in a long, long time. And then finally, you see Godzilla, and he roars, and what a great trailer. I was blown away. I couldn't wait to see Godzilla. I loved that trailer.
Boy,
Best of the year. Best movie trailer of this year.
I wish I shared your enthusiasm there.
Aside from the Star Wars trailer, okay?
I remember, actually, I was bummed out, because I remember seeing all these great actors. You know, you had Bryan Cranston, and you had Elizabeth Olsen, and Juliette Binoche is in this movie. And they showed flashes of a bunch of these. I'm like, oh, man, what is this?
Yeah.
And then it ends up to me, and I'm like, what? This is another Godzilla movie? I was, like, so disappointed. I was, like, thumbs down. But yeah. I ended up liking the movie.
What'd you think there, Mark?
Yeah, no, my wife actually was hoping this would make my top list. But yeah, we actually, because we have kids, it's such a hard thing for us to get out sometimes. But we just happened to see it maybe a couple of months ago, finally, on demand. And I thought it was great. I thought it was a great movie. But I do specifically remember that trailer coming out. You know, from the POV coming down through the clouds and all
that. Yeah.
It was so atmospheric. And I was watching it on a tiny little laptop, and I was like, yep, I'm there. Amazing. But yeah, it's such a good trailer. It's setting a tone and setting that this is not the Roland Emmerich, Matthew Broderick 1998, whatever version it was, and just really setting itself apart and saying, we're going to do something completely different, and you haven't seen Godzilla this way. And even kind of maybe, in dare I say, maybe one-upping Cloverfield just ever so slightly. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Swings it over to my number three, and here's one that I bring up that I saw when I was in the theater with some friends. We're going back to circa like 1993, 94 time in there, and boy, did I absolutely love this trailer. It is a classic film now, and what I love, too, is this is at a time where we did not know every movie that was coming out and who was starring in it. And, you know, now it seems we got too much news and too much information. There's no surprises. But I'm sitting in a theater. it goes dark and the preview comes on, and it's probably the first time I see the character that we now know so well as Forrest Gump. And the trailer was spectacular. It was, I mean, the scope of the Forrest Gump story, they showed glimpses of him in Vietnam playing ping pong, you know, out on the fishing boat. He was, you know, all these places. And the trailer, I remember specifically saying, you have not seen the world until you've seen it through the eyes of Forrest Gump. And I was like, man, I can't wait to see this movie where Tom Hanks hits his head and falls asleep and dreams this spectacular life for himself. Because I didn't know what it was about. No one knew what the movie was, you know, unless you had read the book. It was based on a book, but I hadn't. And I was, you know, a young kid at the time. I thought this must be like a dream sequence. I didn't know what was going on, but it looks spectacular.
It's funny because I saw this come up on a lot of top lists as I was doing some research. I didn't rewatch it. I don't remember the trailer very well.
Oh, it's a great one.
It's not one that stuck with me. Mark, what about you, man?
Yeah, I kind of have to agree that it does have kind of like a slight, like you're saying, like almost like a fantasy, like Walter Mitty kind of, you know, trailer. Like maybe he's going through all these little adventures and maybe it's, you know, kind of dreamt up or whatever. But I do remember seeing the trailer at the time, not really being interested in the movie, and then going and seeing the movie and just absolutely falling in love. And I think it was summer 94 when it came out.
Yep.
And then since then, I've gone back and I've watched the movie. My kids love Forrest Gump.
Sure.
And it's one of those movies that I sit there and I watch with them, and you fall in love every single time you watch it. You find something slightly different, or you appreciate it just a bit more. And it is one of those trailers that I've looked up from time to time, and just because the score's there, you know, and cinematography is just, you know, absolutely beautiful, and you know, you can't beat Tom Hanks and Sally Field and, you know, Robin Wright. So.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. We are into our twos. Mark, what do you got sitting there?
Dun, dun, dun. I've got The Dark Knight. And
well done.
The Dark Knight was definitely one of those movies where you were waiting to see clips. And I think I had seen some bootleg versions back in, you know, 08 or 07 of the bank heist. You know, they had kind of found their way on YouTube and stuff like that. And I saved that as quick as I could off of, you know, the internet. But the last trailer that they showed was the first real time you got a real good, solid glimpse at Heath Ledger and what he was up to with that performance. And, you know, the cinematography, some bits of the chase were in there. But again, you're talking about a 2 hour and 30, 45 minute movie that didn't give away the farm quite yet. But it gave you just enough of a taste to know this is going to be an important movie. And the tone is so much more adult than anything you've seen so far from a superhero movie. And for my money, honestly, as far as trailers are concerned, I'm a huge Superman fan. But that trailer made me love Batman even more, just a little bit. And I think even from just a trailer doing that, I think that it set the tone right. It's such a great tone. And it was, I think it was built around Heath Ledger's performance. I think that's what made it special.
Nice pick. I thought it would come up. It's all the Batman ones. Even Dark Knight Rises is pretty damn good.
Hey, I don't mean to derail this list, but I have to ask Mark, did you see the announcement for Suicide Squad that came out today?
I am in love with that bit of casting for Jared Leto for the Joker.
Did you know about this?
No, I did not know.
Jared Leto is going to be the Joker in an ensemble. It's basically like if Guardians of the Galaxy were all DC villains. There you go. I can't remember all the characters, but Joker, Harley Quinn, and really, who cares after that? Who's Harley?
I think Harley is Margot Robbie, the wife from Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Harley Quinn. He has no idea who Harley Quinn is.
No, I don't know. Is she one of the Penguin's henchmen?
She's Kevin Smith's daughter. True story.
All right. Get away from the Suicide Squad.
No.
What do you got to say?
He says this now, and then when the movie comes out, he's going to be like, I loved it.
I remember when I was all about Suicide Squad.
Hey, really quick. This is to tell you how excited I am about these superhero movies. All this buzz about the Star Wars trailer came out. And so I saw some piece. Honestly, this is a true story. I saw some piece that said, hey, this is now the most downloaded trailer in 1 week of the year, even surpassing Avengers Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron. Yeah.
Okay. I literally, when I read that, I said, oh, I didn't even know the trailer was out yet. I've never seen it.
You didn't see the Avengers trailer?
I did not, I swear to God. Nor did I even know it was out. So put me on a map. That's where I'm at. I have no idea. Unless Matt showed it to me, I wouldn't have never saw it. So, yeah.
He was too busy watching the Forrest Gump trailer.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
All right, Matt, we're into our twos. What do you got sitting there, buddy?
At number two, this, okay, we talked about the use of music in trailers. I think this is probably, for my money, one of the best uses of music in a movie trailer that I can think of in recent times. It is the trailer for The Social Network. It's the
well done, man.
That Radiohead song,
Creep.
Creep, yeah. And it's the slow pan out from a close-up of a computer screen showing people's Facebook profiles. And that's all it is. It's just flashing different pictures. And at this point, Facebook was really at an all-time high. It had become so all-encompassing for all of us. I mean, it showed all these pictures of strangers, but it's this process we can all relate to, seeing all these pictures, watching the likes go up, reading the comments. It was such a great trailer that made me really interested to see the movie. And it showed no scenes from the movie.
Barely any. I think they do finally show when he's being questioned by the school.
Yeah.
But very little.
Very few scenes from the, honestly, those are the least memorable parts of the
right.
of the trailer. It's that song and the pictures of the Facebook as it is known in the beginning.
And it's amazing that all they did was take this song, and it's a choir version of the song being sung, and showing these images on screen, and the way it really encapsulates what Facebook is all about and putting it out there. I'm sad, you know, like it was a picture of somebody, I'm sad and, you know, I'm happy and a newborn baby. And it is all that we're showing out on the internet, and we're trying to express ourselves via the Facebook. And it captured it so, so beautifully.
Yeah. And what a great movie that came out. But it's almost like trailers are their own thing, you know? You can't say, well, the trailer's better than the movie or the movie's better than the trailer. They exist on two separate planes. They should be judged separately. And I think this trailer is just as deserving of the film, and not because of the film, because of its own merit.
Nice,
you know?
Nice. Yeah, good pick there at number two. I'm glad that one came up. I had at number two, Where the Wild Things Are, the one I will sub in that I absolutely fell in love. I actually disliked the movie the first time I saw it. Second time, I went back and watched it and enjoyed it. It's Ben Stiller in Greenberg. And the thing is here about this trailer is, it comes down to a wonderful song in there, Where Are Your Friends Tonight? And it hits all the right chords, you know what I mean? And there's this wonderful shot where he is standing across the street next to one of those blow-up guys from a used car.
Sure, yeah.
What would you call those guys? Like,
I call them blowy guys.
Yeah, and he's moving around.
That's exactly what I call them.
All the imagery they use on screen is just perfect. He's lost in life. You know, he looks over across the street. It says, walk, don't walk, don't walk. And it really nails it to the point where you realize this character, Greenberg, is lost, trying to find himself. And I remember thinking, wow, this is going to be the film we're going to remember Ben Stiller for, because it was dramedy, you know, it had that nice hint of drama.
And yet it's not.
But, however, I do want to say this, Jawheads, on second viewing, I've caught this again now, it's playing on, I believe, still on Netflix and Amazon Prime. Caught it again, and I have to say, second time went way up in my book. I think when I reviewed it here on Cinema Jaw, I probably gave it like 2.5 Jaws. I think it's a good, solid 3.5 Jaw movie, actually.
Oh, wow.
So that's, I'm subbing
really,
that one in.
It's really Something About Mary is the film we're going to remember Ben Stiller for.
All right. We've only crossed over once. We are into our number ones. This is our favorite movie trailer of all time. Mark, hit me.
Are we allowed to do a tie at number one?
Oof. This is controversial, Mark.
I know. It's never been done before.
Go for it. We got a tie. Let's hear it.
Unprecedented.
Maybe we can judge.
I couldn't actually choose between these two, but honestly, when I think of both of them, it comes down to the music and the atmosphere almost immediately. But I've got into the tie between Alien and Jaws, because to me those are the two trailers that just stand out. I mean, Alien obviously has that I really don't even know what you'd call it, just that weird echoing sound. It sounds almost like a cry, but that's the one that just kind of, it sets a tone, almost says nothing about the movie, you know, as far as dialogue is concerned, but you see images and you just know you should be absolutely terrified. And then Jaws is one of my favorite movies of all time, if not my favorite movie of all time. But one, you've got that great trailer guy that, you know, did every trailer that's ever existed.
Sure.
You've got his voice in there starting off with, there's a creature that's alive today. No, and it's such a great start to a trailer, and you get little bits of the movie. And it just, to me, like I said, it's my favorite movie, and it's one of my favorite trailers. So I go with Alien and Jaws as a tie.
I can't complain there. Nice tie. If you're going to tie with Alien and Jaws.
For sure. Yeah, no complaints.
Word to the wise. Matt, what do you got sitting at number one?
All right. At number one, I have a trailer that was so sweet, they demanded that they actually make a film about it. And I think that's why it's... I'm not saying it's the best trailer of all time. I'm just saying it's my favorite and probably the most noteworthy when you're covering trailers. Machete. This, of course, was part of the Grindhouse double feature, the collaboration between Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez. They had all these fake trailers in the middle, and one of them was Machete. It was amazing. It was such a great trailer. It's, I'm Danny Trejo coming out on a motorcycle. He's got all these machetes, and, you know, he's a total badass. And everyone was like, I'd go see that movie. So like, okay, we're going to make the movie.
It is a pretty funny concept when you think about it, right?
That's never happened before. That has never... They demanded, after seeing the trailer, an actual movie. And it was such a crappy, over-the-top trailer. I mean, they had all these weird cameos in it. And the final movie wound up having some strange cameos, too. And it was such a great, you know, crappy B movie that they made a crappy B movie sequel to it.
Machete 2.
Yeah, Machete Kills. So
I could see your point going there. I can't remember the original trailer being all that great. I remember having a laugh with it at the Grindhouse.
They also, in all fairness, they also did make the Rutger Hauer Hobo with a Shotgun, which is also really, really good. But I think of those two actual movies that came out of the Grindhouse trailers, Machete is probably the better of the two.
Nice. Nice. All right, swings it over to my number one, and you guys are missing a big one here. And when we pull Elias out of the Jawbox, I hope he agrees with me. This movie came to us from the Wachowskis, and I remember when I saw the trailer, it's epic in length. We're talking about a six-minute trailer, no joke. And I think they went for this humongous, ambitious film, much like Christopher Nolan lately with Interstellar, and fans can go back and forth. They probably missed the mark, I would say, overall. I have not read the book. I know Elias has. I'm speaking of Cloud Atlas. But boy, the trailer in itself is like a short film. It is so beautiful. They just nailed this trailer. They almost nailed it so good that the movie couldn't live up to that whole understanding of what they were trying to get across in the trailer. They did it in 6 minutes.
Is this the one where Channing Tatum is wearing flying Nikes?
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. But here you have all these, obviously...
He's got elf ears, right?
Multiple storylines where you got Tom Hanks and Halle Berry playing multiple characters. Hugh Grant. I mean, it goes on and on. Susan Sarandon. And they really started out, and you're thinking, like, how could this all be connected? And with the help of a trailer, obviously you got words going on the screen. And again, second time I'm mentioning them, M83, the same band that I mentioned in Rust and Bone, Outro is the name of the song that they play perfectly at the end of this trailer. Works so well. And there's a great shot of Halle Berry getting hit in the car and falling. You think, like, when it ends, you have to be thinking this is going to be one of the most epic movies of all time. And I think that's the mark of a great trailer when that leaves that mark on it. 6 minutes long. If you haven't seen the movie Jawheads and you don't want to, just watch the trailer, and I think you're going to be pretty satisfied with this work here. I don't know. Have you seen this one, Mark?
I've seen the trailer. I've never been a huge fan of the Wachowskis. I think I was okay with The Matrix, but then once we got into Matrix 2 and 3, I just kind of checked out, really. Although I think Bound is one of their best movies ever. But it felt like just more of the same as far as I was concerned. But not to take anything away from them, because I'm sure they're great filmmakers, but it's probably not my cup of tea.
Sure. Well, Jawheads, if you have Twitter pulled up and we missed one of your favorite movie trailers, because there's a ton of them out there, and some are going to strike a chord they just remember them being awesome.
In a world where Cinema Jaw misses your favorite movie trailer, pull up Twitter and get the discussion going.
shoot us a tweet.
How was that? Was that good?
Not bad.
All right, thanks.
Shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mark is going to judge a cinema war looking at how ridiculous the Red Cross lightsaber was in the Star Wars trailer. Plus, he will be taking Matt on in Paul Thomas Anderson movie trivia. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Ryan, I just saw the new short film, Regression Inc., directed by Mark Allen Richardson and starring Brendan Fleming and Robert Reichel. And what a mind f**k this film is. I loved it. The story opens up on the grand opening of the Kinetic Kinesis Institute, run by a smooth-talking salesman, Chaz. After putting a seriously hard sales close on his first client, Phil, who is terminally ill with cancer, Chaz finds out his client's past holds some disturbing secrets. The story has twists, comedy, and suspense. Loved every second of it. Check it out, Jawheads, Regression Inc.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Mark Cantu, writer, director of the film Now Hiring. Me and Matt, check this thing out. We have nothing but great things to say. At Jawheads, I know you guys side with Matt a lot with all his little superhero fanboy-isms.
Men in tights.
He loves men in tights. He loves capes. This is a total play on the genre. I love it because it's a comedy. Mark, again, for the Jawheads that want to check out a little bit more about the movie online, the best place for them to do so?
They can actually go on Facebook and go under Now Hiring Movie, and they can also find us on our website, nowhiringthemovie.com. If you go on YouTube, our trailer, since we're speaking about trailers, if you go under Now Hiring Trailer 2014 or Heroes Among Us Now Hiring Trailer, you should be able to find it.
Nice.
And it's on the website as well.
Awesome. And are you guys on Twitter as well, Mark?
We are on Twitter. Actually, we're under, I believe it's @NowHiring_movie or @NowHiringMovie. I'm not sure what we've got that under, but we're definitely on there. On our webpage for Now Hiring the Movie.
We'll put a link in our show notes, too, so people can find you on Twitter.
Perfect. And one question, too, about the movie. Was the movie title, was that always in mind, Now Hiring? And is that sort of when you were going to write the movie, you already had the title in mind? Or is that one of those that it comes out after the script's complete and you say, yeah, Now Hiring fits it perfectly?
Yeah, Now Hiring was actually, that's always been the title. So I've never seen it any other way. We've had a couple of distributors kind of tell us, well, maybe you'll need to change it here and there. And we're kind of prepared for that, but as far as I was concerned, you know, this is, like I said, it's kind of an origin story for Average Joe. So it's always been Now Hiring. It's always been, okay, the superheroes are hiring, and, you know, who's going to be the guy to step up and lead the team? So
I just love the fact that the superheroes are hiring. It's great.
Why, Rye? You looking for a new job?
Yeah, I'm a superhero.
Yeah?
Yeah, super podcaster.
Rye the movie guy. Right.
That I'm Rye the movie guy.
Get a little MG on your chest.
Yeah, complimented the lead actor before. I just love his demeanor when he was going for the job interview. It was just hysterical. It was great.
I really like the nudist. Can we talk about the nudist real quick?
Absolutely. He is probably one of my favorite characters that we have. And like I said, you may or may not get a little bit more of him towards the end of the movie. So that's all I'm going to say. Spoiler alert.
Can we mention what his power is? Or
yeah, say his power, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for all it. Right. Yeah, he makes people's clothes disappear.
But we don't get any nudity out of that girl that he's interviewing, or that the girl who's interviewing him, I should say. There's a quick boom, and then, but she's covering up her boobs. But it was a hilarious scene.
Well, and we try to kind of keep it like, you know, a slight PG-13. You know, some of the stuff they kind of get away with in like the original Iron Man, where you know you kind of see a little bit of skin, but nothing too revealing. But yeah, the funny thing about that is the girl that's playing Blinks, who's the fast superhero. And the nudists, they're actually married in real life.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so like, that's why it's funny for us in-house to just kind of be like, ha, yeah, there you go. But yeah, they're completely, and there are actually a couple out of Austin who are just probably some of the best actors that are in Texas.
Sweet. I really like that scene.
I did too. Again, Jawheads, the film is called Now Hiring. Check it out online and look for it, hopefully in theaters and in your home theater pretty soon. Mark is going to be judging a cinema war. He's going to be taking you on in trivia. But before we get there, Matt, we threw one question, I know for a fact, into the jaw box. Elias has got to be down. I don't know if he could have dug this one up. It was a bit tricky.
He's got the turducken in there.
He might have ate the turducken. Let's open up that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
What's going on, guys? I'm glad that Mark got my carrier pigeon earlier because it was actually, the pigeon was inside the duck, inside the turkey. And it escaped, and I befriended it before I cooked the rest of them all, because Matt gave me that present for Thanksgiving. Anyway.
We should call Elias the Birdman.
Yeah, exactly.
The Birdman of the Jawbox.
So, yeah, there is just one thing this week here for me. It was, what was the song that was in the A Few Good Men trailer that was also in a couple other? It is by Randy Eldman, and it is called Fire in a Brooklyn Theater.
Ooh, Fire in a Brooklyn Theater. Sound
That's
familiar?
Going on my iPod soon, yeah.
That's a cool name for a song.
Yeah.
And especially one that's going to be in movie trailers.
Right, and I'm sure it's based off of an actual story. So,
Now, Elias, you might have heard me mention my number one trailer. You were in the Jawbox and looking up these facts for us. But you may have heard me mention Cloud Atlas.
Yes,
you've read the book. You've seen the movie. You've seen the trailer. Do you agree with me that the trailer is just awesome?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, I would advise every Jawhead out there to read the book and just watch the trailer, and you will be blown away. I think that combo is one of the best entertainment experiences ever, because the movie falls short, definitely, but you see all what you want to see in the trailer, all the best of it from the book, and it's all fleshed out there, and it's, yeah, the song just ties it all together, but it's such a exhilarating experience to read the book. I've watched that trailer like as much as Matt's watched the new Star Wars one.
Same here. I've probably seen the trailer 50 times.
Which is to say a lot because it's 6 minutes. But yeah, it's such a great experience. But yeah, or just watch the trailer if you don't want to read the book. The book's a tough read because they go into all sorts of different type of language styles. If you've seen the movie, it's a little bit of goofy hearing Tom Hanks talk a little bit weird when they're in a different land at a different time. In the book, it plays a little better, but it's a tough read. But maybe that's just because me, because I can't really read that well down here in the Jawbox.
Yeah. Poor guy. All right, get back in there.
All right, thanks.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt bet on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Mark Cantu, gets to play judge, jury, and executioner and tell the Jawheads at home who he thinks won the Cinema War. It's important because we're battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time. Well, as we discussed, the Star Wars trailer is out. There is a red crossed lightsaber in it. Ha! Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, what do you make of the red crossed lightsaber in the Episode 7 trailer? Was it cool or was it lame? Matt, you'll be fighting for it was cool. Rye, you'll be fighting it was lame. Let the Cinema War begin.
Matt, the only issue I had with the Episode 7 trailer was the red, look at my cool cross lightsaber. It clearly was trying to emulate the awesome shot of Darth Maul's dual-bladed lightsaber of Episode 1.
Crossed lightsaber, blah, blah, blah. It's cool. Okay, if everything was always the same all the time, it would be boring. Variety is the spice of life, so they spiced up the lightsaber a little bit, and I think it looks badass.
Matt, contrary to what you may think, I still can get a little geeky at times, and I love a cool new lightsaber like the next guy, but it has to be practical. This stupid cross lightsaber seems to serve no purpose other than to be different.
See, I'm really glad you brought the practicality up here because it's very practical. It's called a hilt, and when you have a sword fight, it protects your hands. And let's talk for a second about the lightsabers, and I'm sure you're going to bring this up, more fiery appearance. And a lot has been said, speaking of being geeky, about how this is a new Sith who maybe never built a lightsaber before, or it's an unstable synthetic lightsaber crystal or something like that. Yeah, no. People are saying this. Guys, get this. Ready? This explains the fiery appearance. It's snowing in the scene. It's snowing. Do you ever wonder what a lightsaber would look like in the rain or the snow? That's probably what it looks like.
Well, all right, man. I know.
I should have waited till you brought that up.
I know what is really bothering me here. In Episode 1, That introduced us to the virgin birth, as we came to find out that Darth Vader actually had no father. Now, some guy in a black cloak is carrying around a red cross in the forest. Are the ushers at the movie theater going to be passing around the offertory basket while we're watching the movie? Will there be holy water on our way out? This is getting ridiculous.
Whoa, that is a huge leap, okay? How do you go from lightsaber to the Crusades, okay? I don't know. I mean, I guess it is sort of like a Crusades type sword. But a hilt, I already said this, but a hilt makes sense. It's this new style of fighting called blocking.
That's blocking?
Blocking. That's my whole point.
All right. Matt, Episode 7 is going to be awesome. No doubt about it. I'm sure of it. The only thing that can get in the way is them trying too hard. From what I saw, the only thing in the trailer that smelled of trying too hard was that Red Cross lightsaber. That was lame.
It's not lame. Ryan, you need to wake up more than the Force does. Excitement? Ha. Adventure? Ha. A Jedi craves not these things, but I do. And I want to see a different and new design in the new Star Wars universe, not just rehashing the old thing. Something tells me that if this lightsaber already has your fanboy cockles in a bunch, then this is going to be a long, long saga.
Oh, as always, me and Matt cannot see eye to eye on a cinema war. We throw it to our guest, our jury this week, Mark Cantu. What'd you think of this cinema war?
I think it was intense and it was heated, just as hot as the blades on a lightsaber. If I was giving it to Rod for passion, you'd win it hands down, but I gotta go with the exciting, lens-flary J.J. Abrams version of Star Wars now. Gotta give it to Matt.
Yes! Oh! That's right. I don't need two lightsaber blades to beat you, Rye the Movie Guy. Just one with a crossed hilt.
I'll still say this, and you have to agree with me. It's not as good as when Darth Maul lit up the dual blades. That's still the best.
I agree with that. I agree with that completely.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. But it was, I don't know, it's cool. It's really cool.
Well, that earns you 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever you want. And let me guess.
Go ahead, guess.
Something to do with Star Wars.
Star Wars.
No.
Here's what I'm going to say, everybody. Just let's get off your internet high horse. It's so easy to pick apart this trailer for this highly anticipated movie and break it down scene by scene and say, this is stupid, this is lame, why is he doing this and that? Just shut up already, okay? Let's just wait and see the stupid movie. And I bet you, and when I say stupid, I mean awesome, you're going to love it. Yeah, it's got a cross hilt. They got to do something a little different outside the box. It's not as cool as Darth Maul, maybe, but it's pretty cool. And I'm sure that's going to be...
25 seconds. Let's go.
I'm sure it's going to be really fun.
All right. Well done.
There
well
you go.
Done.
30 seconds.
Yeah, hate when Matt wins. All right.
I win so often, I don't know what to say anymore.
It brings us to...
I apologize. Sorry, guys.
It brings us to trivia. And trivia is sponsored by...
VenomCPM.com. Are you looking to make some extra money from your websites? Are you a company looking to advertise your websites to a wide targeted audience? If so, head on down to VenomCPM.com to start earning money and promoting your business today.
And in honor of Inherent Vice coming out into theaters, Paul Thomas Anderson movie, we are playing Paul Thomas Anderson movie trivia. It works like this. Mark, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals. And if you get hung up on a question, our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, has clues to all the questions. You get one trip to the ER.
I guess, as a guest, I will go first.
Nice.
I'm telling you right now, I'm probably going to get my butt kicked. So.
All right, question number one over to Mark. In Boogie Nights, what actor played porn director Jack Horner?
That would be Burt Reynolds.
I should state they always start out easy because we want to make everybody comfortable here. They get harder as we go along. Question number two.
You're losing me in, basically. That's what happens here.
That's
got it. All right, good.
Question number two over to Matt. Matt, right. In The Master, Philip Seymour Hoffman played Lancaster Dodd, the charismatic religious leader. But what actress played his wife in the movie?
His wife? Damn it. I knew the other male lead. I have no idea. Laura Linney.
Incorrect. Mark, you got a chance for a steal.
I'm going to go with Clark Kent's main squeeze, Amy Adams.
Damn it.
You're right.
Really? I was going to guess Amy Adams.
Nice. Well done. Well done. Mark takes a commanding lead, 2-0. Nothing makes me happier when Matt's down after beating me in Cinemore.
I'm trying to make up for what I did earlier.
I knew it was alliteration. I said Laura Linney, but it was Amy Adams.
All right. Question 3 over to Mark. You could blow this thing wide open. Mark, what was the name of Paul Thomas Anderson's first feature that came out in 1996 and starred Samuel L. Jackson, Gwyneth Paltrow, and John C. Reilly?
I saw the trailer for this, and I don't know it off the top of my head. I have a vague recollection of it, but I don't remember the name at all.
Matt, you can climb back into it. It's 2-0 right now. His first feature, what was the name of it?
1996? Is that what you said?
Correct. Do you have a lifeline if you need it early?
Yeah, maybe I should use it, although I hate using them on a steal. No, I'll let this one go by, man. How about Back to the Future 2? That was his first one, right? No?
Absolutely incorrect. We were looking for Hard Eight. Hard Eight was his first feature.
Okay.
Still 2-0, Mark. Question number 4 is over to him.
Real interesting fact about that film was originally named Sydney, so we would have accepted Sydney, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
See?
Rename.
Elias is looking it all up. Yeah.
Well, I'm a huge fan of P.T. Anderson.
Yeah.
PTA.
Now we know what Elias is doing in that jaw box all the time. All right, it is two to nothing still. Mark, question number 4 is over to Matt. Matt, Adam Sandler has appeared in one Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Name it.
All right. It's either Punch Drunk Love or Spanglish. I think it was Punch Drunk Love.
Matt is on the board. It is 2-1. 2-1.
There we go.
Question number 5 over to Mark. Mark, who plays motivational speaker T.J. Mackey in 1999's Magnolia?
That would be everybody's favorite grinner, Tom Cruise.
3-1, commanding lead here. Question number 6 over to Matt. Matt, what real-life porn actress appeared in Boogie Nights to play Little Bill, who was played by William H. Macy, who played Little Bill's wife?
Nina Hartley.
He knows his porn actresses. Came out
and
just
fired away. I was going to say, it was a little too quick on the draw. It was a little too quick.
Yeah, I was wondering, too, like, if you had
I knew it at what real-life porn actress.
Yeah, well, I was wondering, if you had to use a lifeline, what would have been the clue, Elias?
I know, what would have been the clue there?
All right, the clue was, also starred in and Out of Africa, Hot and Nasty, Naked Stranger, and Girls Who Dig Girls 4.
Nice.
Are those actual titles?
Elias looked them up.
Okay.
Hey, right. Elias is the one with the computer down in the jaw box these days.
Well, what are you using that computer for, man?
And the turkey.
Jeez.
I'm just glad you answered that quick, because I was in the room with my wife here, so that would have looked really bad had I answered that one.
Did you know, Mark? Did you know the answer?
I'm going to go with no, but I'm going to shake my head yes.
Okay. She's one of the legendary greats of the adult industry.
It is now 3-2, so it's a ball game here. It's 3-2. Mark, you're still in the lead, and this question is over to Mark. Mark, Daniel Day-Lewis won the Academy Award and drank a milkshake in There Will Be Blood, but what was his character's name in the film?
That would be Daniel Plainview.
Good draw there. Wow. Good draw there. Yeah. 4-2. This ball game is over. Last question of the game, over to Matt K. Matt, name the actor who
should have used that lifeline early.
Name the actor who played the priest Eli Sunday in There Will Be Blood.
I'll go to the ER.
Whoa! Question number 8 over to Elias Rodriguez. Elias, who played the actor Eli Sunday in There Will Be Blood?
A priest and his name was Sunday?
Yeah.
Your clue is, he did not say much in Little Miss Sunshine.
He did not say much in Little Miss Sunshine. Steve Carell?
Got a chance for a steal here.
I hate to do this to you, but it was all Dano.
Remember in Little Miss Sunshine, he didn't want to talk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his character.
The teenage son?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice clue there. Hmm. Didn't get it. Mark, you clobbered him. See, you didn't think you were going to do good.
I thought it was going to be like a harder question.
You overestimated Matt Kay. You overestimated him.
It happens.
All right. Mark wins this one 5-2. Was no question. In case there was a tie, we call it a jawbreaker here, Mark. It would have came to you. Better Paul Thomas Anderson scene, Mark Wahlberg, Jesse's Girl in Boogie Nights, or Daniel Day-Lewis, I drink your milkshake and there will be blood.
It's a classic for a reason. I got to go with Daniel Day-Lewis and there will be blood.
That is incorrect. It's Jesse's Girl in Boogie Nights.
Oh, of course. I got to go with the 80s song.
The real that's always a joke. The real jawbreaker is this. Age of Amy Adams closest to. Matt, you got to guess?
Amy Adams is 37 years old.
Lock him in at 37, Elias. Mark, you got a guess?
I would say 35.
Wow, we would have gave that one to Matt. She's 40 years old.
Wow.
Yeah?
She looks great. She's doing well.
She is.
Good for
her. I'm giving a thumbs up because my wife's sitting right here.
Awesome. Oh, boy. Brings us to the end of a great jaw. It was a blast.
Yeah, definitely.
I love talking movie trailers.
I do too, man.
Now I know what I'm going to do when I go home and crack a PBR open.
You're going to go on YouTube and just go down the trailer?
Yeah. 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 Watch some, what was the name of those Nina Hartley movies? Do they have trailers? Oh, man.
I don't think those have trailers. I don't think those have trailers at all.
No, they do.
Yeah.
Matt would know. No. Matt would know.
5 minutes is all you need with those.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Again, Mark, we got to thank you coming on. It was a blast. And again, the film is called Now Hiring. And for the jawheads that want to check out more online, the best place to do so is?
It's going to be on our Facebook page at Now Hiring Movie and also at the website for nowhiringthemovie.com. Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks again.
For sure, man.
We also got to thank all our sponsors. Thanks again, guys. And also thanks to the new 400.
Yeah, best movie theater in Chicago.
Yeah, can't go wrong. Check out what's playing at the New 400 at their website, thenew400.com. And also, Matt, the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thanks, guys. I want to do a real quick plug, if you guys don't mind. I actually directed a sketch/music video that's about to come out. It's called Just Because It's a Tweet, Don't Make It a Joke. I know so many jawheads out there tweet a lot, so if you see people who try to make jokes all the time, it's a video as if one of those people tries to do stand-up, and it doesn't really go that well, spoiler alert. Anyway, so it's a music video, and it's going to be out. Follow me on Twitter, at Elias Rod, ElIazRod. Please watch it. It's just real short. It's a minute 40
seconds. How do you fit the camera down in there?
He does amazing things in that jawbox.
Yeah, he does.
It's all shot with a pinhole camera. That's how.
Well done. Well done, Elias.
Thanks.
So until next week, check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and keep on talking about the movies.
It's a wrap, dude.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so much, man. I had so much fun. I appreciate that.
Good, for sure, man.